Now a special Talk Radio 1210 WPHT presentation. It's Readin', Writin', and Reason. Now here's your host, Dom Giordano.
Hey, welcome in everyone to Readin', Writin', and Reason with Dom Giordano, our weekly look at all those things that influence parental rights, the money we spend on education and kids, safety. And to that point here on Readin', Writin', and Reason this week, a survey out indicates that teachers question the idea of all these active shooter drills. In other words, they don't believe that these things make a whole lot of sense and that we ought to be taking a look at cutting them down. This recent survey was released by RAND, and it found that teachers don't feel any safer or more prepared to respond to active shooter incidents after lockdown drills. The sentiments expressed regarding school safety mirror that of teachers across the country. Researchers administered a survey to a randomly selected 1,020 K-12 teachers using the American Teacher Panel. According to this, specifically asked whether such drills made teachers feel more or less safe. The RAND survey pointed out key findings. 1 in 6 K-12 teachers nationally works in a district that has been touched by gun violence. Wow, since 2019-2020, 1 in 6. Schools do not typically announce when an active shooter drill will occur to students and parents. Many schools are not providing support to help students manage any level of stress or anxiety. Teachers are split on whether participation in drills makes them feel more prepared. Slightly less than half say the drills made them feel more prepared. Half perceive drills as having no impact on preparedness. A slight majority of teachers reported that drills made students feel more prepared. Most teachers, 69%, indicated that participating in active shooter drills has no impact on their perception of safety at schools. All right, so I am not a fan of this. We do too many. They're too graphic. We've gone too far with this stuff, would be the way that I see it. And I hope that surveys like this convince people this is not going to have the type of benefit that you want. The big story locally this week on Readin', Writin', and Reason here in our area was that Upper Darby has approved $1.1 million in a weapons detection system after finding AR-style magazine at the school. We had on the superintendent of schools and talked with him last week, but I just wanted to remind you, as this goes into effect, it will take 40 to 60 minutes to process high school students through the system. And that, to me, seems to be a bit much. Just a reminder, too, this weekly podcast, Readin', Writin', and Reason, please tell people wherever they get their podcast, they'll be able to find us. And we do bring you the best national guest, local guests, insight into all these issues, even as they play out politically. By the way, Pennsylvania, Willow Grove Park Mall, shopping mall, has added a new parental supervision policy. Now, Roe and I have shopped at Willow Grove over the years, maybe some years 7, 8, 10 times, some years 4 or 5. And I've noticed, you know, they started to have difficulties, the food court and the like. Under the new policy, any visitor under 18 years old will have to be joined by a parent or guardian, at least 21 years old, Monday to Saturday starting at 5 p.m. and on Sunday starting at 3 p.m. The policy applies to the Willow Grove Park, parking lots, garages, etc. Mall security will enforce this. The park says, Willow Grove Park Mall, one parent or guardian over 21 can supervise up to 4 minors, but at least one of them has to be the child of the parent or guardian who's present. Now, there is no doubt about it that they've had problems at this mall. And, you know, classically, kids would go and hang at the mall. It was a sign of independence, food court, little bit of shopping. But, you know, we've had on Pat Malloy, Abington Police Chief, and we've talked about this, and there have been concerns. There has been violence. There have been difficult things that have happened there. So I support the mall in this. I could understand why. If you work at the mall, it's not as restrictive. You just have to show identification. But the point being, this is the type of thing where we are, and sadly, what's often necessary. A couple more items here on Reading, Writing, and Reason with Dom Giordano. Philadelphia schools' dress code is now a national model, says the Philadelphia Inquirer, with kids allowed to dress in a way that celebrates their identities. The dress code spells out protected hairstyles such as braids, locks, puffs, afros, twists, wigs, including styles with elements such as headbands, head wraps, bonnets. They were big on the bonnet here. Barrettes or beads. And I'm not a big fan of the school uniform. I get what the argument is. I've always felt it was too restrictive and doesn't necessarily have the impact that you would think. But some of the things that Philadelphia is saying here, as far as this being the model, seems to me to be not exactly, we'll see. We'll see how this plays out this year and what they report on it. In the good news front, California now, and this may be a reaction to the Supreme Court ruling on discrimination against Asian students with DEI and the like, but California has banned legacy admissions in all colleges and universities. They became the fourth state to ban legacy admissions, a practice that's long been criticized as favoring wealthy students and familial alumni connections. This is going to be interesting to see if these schools say they're following the law, whether or not they'll actually do it. What that means is if somebody in your family went there, then you get to go there almost by rote. We'll see, because these legacy admissions often can be people that are big contributors or somewhat contributors, and that may be something these schools certainly want to continue to encourage. All right? I'll keep my eye. It's a reaction to a pushback by the Supreme Court and others on the DEI type of stuff that's going on. All right, one final item this week on Reading, Writing, and Reason. A Virginia school board now, just in the last couple of days, has to pay $575,000 to a teacher fired for refusing to use trans students' pronouns. The conservative legal advocacy group, the Alliance Defending Freedom, announced a settlement this week, and it cleared Peter Valenge's hiring from his record. The former French teacher at West Point High School sued the school board and administrators after he was fired. It took all the way back to 2018. The principal told the school board that Valenge allegedly refused to call a ninth grade student by the male pronouns he and him because he considered it a lie. The student had transitioned and used male pronouns. He said he would referred to the student by his new name, but wouldn't use pronouns, citing his devout Christian faith. He was fired, the superintendent said, because he refused to follow the school's directive numerous times and created, oh, there it is, a hostile environment. Glenn Youngkin, I think, is a driving force here in Virginia with the changes around transgender policies. And that may have made quite a difference here. Listen, I hope you enjoy the podcast, Reading, Writing, and Reason, each week, the big guests that we bring you, the information that you don't hear in other places. Please tell other people about it wherever you get your podcast, and often hear it on usually Saturday afternoons on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Thanks to Dan and Henry for producing this. We'll have more next week of Reading, Writing, and Reason. But coming up, also in the news this week, we had a great guest, Beth Ann Rossica, local education expert in the Philadelphia Public Schools. She came on to talk about the issue of Upper Darby High School putting in this AI sort of device to detect metal that is going to cause tremendous difficulty for students getting into school. Coming up on Reading, Writing, and Reason, Beth Ann Rossica. I'm gonna teach ya. Hey, welcome back into Reading, Writing, and Reason, our weekly podcast on parental rights and all things happening in schools. Beth Ann Rossica, Philadelphia area education expert. Join me this week on my noon to three show, talking about mainly Upper Darby High School going to $1.1 million. But they do not have anyone there that's a school resource officer, as we understand it, that's armed to ferret out weapons. They've had one issue in this school year. It's a high school of 4,400 students. Here's what Beth Ann Rossica told me about that. Hey, Beth Ann, welcome back. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on the show, Dom.
Well, Beth Ann, first wanted to talk with you about Upper Darby High School. It was, and I told some people today that are more insiders, they didn't fully know about this, and they were shocked they'd be spending the amount of money they're spending, $1.1 million, and something that's going to take students 40 to 60 minutes a day in the morning to get into the building, and something this drastic without a school resource officer who's armed. What are your thoughts on Upper Darby High School overall?
Well, I've written about Upper Darby many, many times and their academic decline and the myriad of issues that are going on there and have been going on for quite some time. So, you know, I have really mixed feelings about this specific issue with the monitors that they're putting in. I mean, 1.1 is an extraordinary amount of money. However, what I will say is that districts waste more money than that on all sorts of other garbage that is, you know, far inferior. So for me, the money is the least of the issues, because if it is actually something that would keep students and staff safe, then I think that that's a no-brainer. $1 million to keep everybody safe is certainly worth the money. The question becomes, is this really the best way to instill a feeling of comfort and security inside of a school building? And I think that the bigger issue that I've seen raised by parents and community members is that this was very much rushed through. This is a really big purchase. It's a really big change. And the fact that there wasn't a longer dialogue, there wasn't a community task force, advisory force, parents, people be able to give comments and to really discuss through the pros and cons of this, I think that this is just yet another example of Upper Darby not taking everybody's feelings, thoughts, considerations into the mix before making such a paramount decision for these schools. Because, well, it's not just the high school,
right?
It's the two middle schools as well.
Well, I would agree with that, but we have this compromise. People were asking me about it the other day. My understanding of it, I think, is pretty clear, but you may know better. In the budget with Shapiro, and it was our representative Sheeran and others from Souderton, they got that the state will give $50,000 to the school district to have a school resource officer. They wanted to demand they must be armed with a firearm. The compromise was that'll be on the school district to decide. I still think that's better, Beth Ann, because with this inconvenience of this detection system, if you had a maniac coming into that school, they can go right there or come in from another door. I'd rather have someone there that I know is going to take them on.
Right. No, and I agree. And I don't see them as mutually exclusive areas. I think that we absolutely need school resource officers in the buildings, and in an area like Upper Darby, having somebody armed probably makes sense in order to be able to keep everybody safe. I just think that, once again, Upper Darby makes knee-jerk decisions, and they don't really look at all of the aspects. I mean, I wrote recently, maybe a couple months ago, you know, about the whole cell phone issue in school. I mean, Upper Darby could be taking steps to remove cell phones from the school, which would also help to create a much better environment for the students. So there's a lot of things that they could be doing that they're not doing, and it feels like this was a knee-jerk reaction, and to your point, a lot of money.
Woodbury, Beth Ann, is the latest to do this. Now, you're an education expert. My expertise comes from being on the front lines teaching. I think you've had some of that. It's going to be fairly difficult to be doing that with the removal of the phones. The execution of it is important. I'm in favor of it. I can't imagine having kids distracted by that all day long, what that's like.
Well, and I've talked about this before, Dom, the cell phone issue, and there are schools in Pennsylvania that have outlawed cell phones. Kids are not mm-hmm. allowed to have cell phones in school. And what we're seeing is that student engagement is very much increased, and teachers don't have to fight for the attention of kids. I mean, there are two ways to do this, and actually the legislature approved funding through the Safe Schools Act to use towards the elimination of cell phones. They can purchase these, they're called cell phone bags, that the phone mm-hmm. goes in and it's basically locked so that you can't access it during the day. But I also think that you can simply have a policy that phones have to stay in your locker. And if they're out of your locker, then you get a detention and, you know, you take progressive disciplinary
right.
action.
Right.
We just have to change. We have to change the environment. Everybody's become so accustomed to having access to their cell phone 24/7. We've got to change that environment. And, you know, I think that the safety issue really is the cell phones are a part of that, because, you know, a lot of what leads to kids bringing cell phones to school or weapons to school is the feeling of not being safe. And part of not feeling safe is the garbage that kids post on social media, the cyberbullying that goes on, and kids bring weapons because they think that they need to feel safe. And if we could improve that climate and make kids feel emotionally and physically safer through the removal of cell phones, I think that would go a long way to addressing many of the issues that we're seeing in public schools.
Beth Ann Rossiga with us. And Beth Ann, writing over at Broad and Liberty, this has become a touchstone issue here. I see the election shaping up. We had the Teamsters president of 96,000 Teamsters in Pennsylvania on this week. He didn't fully concede, but basically he did. That Trump has broken through, we know this now, big time, with union members, Teamsters, and the like. And yet, when it comes to these pesky women in the suburbs again, this is an area, and that's why the tell was, the Trump people know this, he started talking about being a protector this week. Now, you've been writing about Harris and women, which is in a layup for her, and maybe there's some material there, some thought process that the Trump people should be looking at, because I think you've hit upon several things with VP Harris and women.
Yes, well, I wish that the Trump campaign would call me, because I'd be happy to talk to them about messaging that they could 100% improve upon, because their messaging has not been stellar either. However, you know, what I am talking about, I've completed 3 of a 4-part series on the case against Kamala in Broad and Liberty, and my most recent one on Monday talked about the conundrum of womanhood. You know, Harris and the Democratic Party cannot even define or refuses to define what a woman is, but they champion themselves as, you know, we're the leaders of, you know, reproductive services for women in the country. And I really believe that their positions are completely antithetical from one another. You can't support women if you can't even define who and what they are. And, you know, you opened this up with the thought of women having to compete against men in sports. I absolutely agree with you. It's abhorrent. It's ludicrous. It makes no sense. And it is low-hanging fruit. And that is a message, and it's been polled. The majority of people in this country, regardless of their political affiliation, do not think that boys should be able to compete against girls in sports. I have 2 teenage boys. There is no way I would let them compete against a girl in a sport. It's just, it makes no sense. And I think that messaging has to be made very, very clear. Harris continues to refuse to answer questions on that issue.
Mm-hmm.
She refuses to answer questions on at what point in time is abortion acceptable or not acceptable. I mean, I talk in my article that, you know, I was a former Democrat. I am still a generally pro-choice woman who lives in southeastern Pennsylvania, the demographic that, you know, the Republicans really need to have any hope of winning. However, even as a primarily pro-choice person, I have very clear lines in the sand about when abortion is acceptable. And where Waltz has come from and where I believe Harris comes from is absolutely unacceptable.
Let me give you a tough question on that, though. In broad strokes, what is the line in the sand? I'm talking about this in political terms, because that's where we are, that people like Trump and others ought to have top of mind. Is it 15 weeks or is it even more than that?
Well, so, you know, Dom, and, you know, again, I'm probably not the general listener to your show. I don't consider myself conservative on a lot of issues. But in this case, for me, I mean, Pennsylvania, we have a 24-week allowability for abortion, and I'm comfortable with that. As a pro-choice person, I'm comfortable with that. You know, I know that some people feel like it should be at the heartbeat. Some people, you know, have different lines. For me, my personal line is if a baby can be born and live with life support, then to me, that's
right.
Where the line is. That's where, then it's a baby. It's not a choice. It is a baby. It's a human being. And again, I know that this is a very hot button issue. But if the mother's life is at risk, I mean, nobody's ever saying that if the mother's going to die, you let the mother die, you know, to have the child be born. But that's the messaging that the progressives and particularly Harris and Waltz want people to believe. And they're unwilling to answer those questions. I mean, killing a baby at, you know, 9 months in utero, it is murder to me.
Absolutely.
No question about that.
I don't sense this is going to be quite the issue it was in 2022, but I do sense it is going to be top in mind for, shall we say, reluctant voters, younger women under 30, 40 that don't come out all the time or vote by mail or whatever. And it's still there as the one pivot they have in the suburbs.
I agree with you, Dom. I think that there are a lot of women who are not willing to do the research, because I can tell you that here in the suburbs, if I were to talk to even, you know, Democratic moms and I said, you know, are you okay with abortion in the eighth month? Most of them would say no.
Mm-hmm.
But the Democrats' messaging, Harris's messaging on this issue has been very good. The message here should be Pennsylvania already has a law on the books that allows abortion up to 24 weeks. Nobody's taking that away. Neither Trump nor Harris, you know, will have anything to do with that unless, you know, they try to do something in Congress. But this is codified in Pennsylvania already. And I don't think that anybody's doing a very good job of explaining where things are in Pennsylvania and why it really shouldn't be that big of an issue for voters, particularly in the Southeast.
Where's the best place to find your work, Beth Ann, at Broad and Liberty? Where else?
Yes, broadandliberty.com. Occasionally I have some pieces in Delaware Valley Journal, but for the most part, you can find everything that I write in broadandliberty.com.
Thanks, Beth Ann. As always, have a nice weekend.
Thanks. Take care, Dom.
All right, that's Beth Ann Rossiga. Hope you enjoyed the podcast this week. Tell other people about it. We'll be back next week with another edition of Reading, Writing, and Reason.
You need a lesson, gonna bring it to you now.